Hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions. Now, since we first started doing this, I've been saying, you know, I'm like an old monster movie freak, and I kept saying, we have to have Donnie Donegan.
From Son of Frankenstein.
Yeah, Son of Frankenstein. And we looked and found him.
We tracked him down. Here he is.
Yeah. So
the last remaining surviving cast member from Son of Frankenstein.
With Boris Karloff, Basil Rathbone, and Bela Lugosi.
And Lionel Atwill. So, yep. Donnie, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you. You tracked me down. That's why the FBI was here this morning, huh?
And we have something else in common. We're both can be proud to say we're part of two Disney classic films. I was the parrot in Aladdin, and you, tell us what you were.
I was a facial model for Bambi, the original Bambi first, and then Mr. Disney took my mom and me to lunch one day, and just as casual as you can be, he said, hey, how about doing the voice? And my mother said something very clever, like, you bet.
So we are talking to Disney royalty. We're talking to the voice, the original voice of Bambi, which is a very, very cool thing. But Donnie, let's start at the beginning. You were a kid of the Depression. No money. How did you get into show business in the first place?
If I was a linguist, I would tell you luck in 55 languages.
Okay. Tell us in one.
Easy. I'll just use English. It's probably my best question. And a lot of wonderful people. San Angelo and San Antonio, Texas. Everybody's looking for a job. College graduates were looking for a job. Neither of my parents had any real education. Wonderful people, and I mean wonderful people. Work for 20 cents an hour, each one of them. And my dad finally got a job for 25 cents an hour. Now think about that as a motivation for a second. And moved us from San Antonio, Texas, to Memphis, Tennessee. I've just turned 4 years old, and we moved into a little two-room apartment. Now, I remember some of this, and rather soon, I remember most of it, okay? Little two-room apartment above a small hardware store in the middle of Memphis, Tennessee, and no radio. Nobody knew how to spell television yet, of course. And both my parents had worked like the Dickens, and there's no entertainment. We didn't think about that word, entertainment. And my mom started taking me on Saturday afternoons when she wasn't working about two ding-dings away. And that's how I counted distances in those days. And for an old land navigator to use ding-dings is really funny to say. Ding-dings to me were the stop signs.
You were two ding-dings away. Very good.
Yeah. You know, the signs came down, go, ding-ding-ding, stop. So two ding-dings away, where we live, there was on the street corner, large concrete area street corner, I think in front of a little drugstore, was a man that danced on Saturday afternoon with a black hat, like a top hat, on the sidewalk, and a big fula. I had never seen one before. I remember this well. You cranked it up, had a huge enunciator, like a big cone, and he had tap shoes on. I had enough. That's my first experience with that, I'm sure. And later in my life, I teased people about he must have been to an orthopedic surgeon, had all his bones removed. He could make Ray Bolger look like he was doing a Marine Corps march. This guy could really dance.
Oh, he danced like a rag doll, like he had no bones.
Yeah, right. He was incredible. And a lot of people, he was a black man, and a lot of people were standing around. This is right on the area, edge of an area called the black area, and I'm very sensitive to that term now. I'm hostile to that term. But there in those days, I didn't know anything. Okay? And 4 years old, my mom's there, and she's clapping. Everybody's clapping and throwing pennies and some nickels, big deal nickels, people making 20 cents an hour, right, toward this hat. And I'm standing there, nobody's paying attention to me if I'm quiet for a change. And I'm barefoot. Not because I want to be barefoot. We don't have any shoes. I don't have any shoes. And I started imitating this guy. And he notices that after a couple of Saturdays.
Wow.
He comes over to my mother. I'll never forget the first man I ever saw bow extra courteous to a lady. And they made a heck of an impression on me to this day. He bowed to my mother. Everybody stopped. He stopped at the Dictrola and asked my mom if I could come out in front and dance with him. So I'm barely 4 years old. This guy is at least 6'2", no bones. And we start doing a duet.
That's great.
About a month later, the word was it was going to be a big talent show in Memphis at a theater that's still there. And I understand it's a national monument now, not because of me, but because of architecture. Anyway, the very nice theater in the downtown area of Memphis was going to have a talent show. Folks went to talent shows in those days.
Sure.
And spelling bees. And they were bored, no money. I mean, everybody went, it's the darnest thing. Yeah, we're kind of jaded about those things today. But a talent show and a big money prize. Big money prize. And everybody was talking about it. Sam talked to my mother, and then he visited with my father for the first time when he could catch him about entering me in that talent show for children. So they put me in this talent contest, and Sam and his family had to sit up in the special area, which I think I started resenting at the time, frankly.
Yes, he couldn't perform with you because it was whites only.
Yeah, rights only.
Yeah.
And in fact, he couldn't even sit in the place was packed. He couldn't even sit in the regular theater.
What a shame.
Wow.
What a shame.
He had to go up in the balcony somewhere. I remember this. And that angered me a little. I remember this well, okay? That angered me a little bit. It was probably why I've been in the NAACP for decades, okay?
Okay.
But, now I'm on, we're in the theater, and I got these tap shoes on, and I know it's I'm kind of cheating with it. I can flip that baby really good, dang, 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 you know. So, and I'm in the wings watching this thing. And now I think I realize that I'm the youngest whippersnapper around here. And the talent was great. The lady, the performer in front of me was a high school girl, did the ballet. And I can remember turning to my mother and saying something, not verbatim, but something about, you know, this is a contest. What am I doing here?
Oh, people with real talent, right?
Oh, yeah. It was terrific. And the place was packed with lots of applause. And now it's my turn. My mom or somebody helped her put the Sam's Dictrola out. They had an orchestra, but they didn't have my number. I had one little number rehearsed. And one of those funny little songs of the time of the Depression. They put the recorder out on the stage, cranked it up. Somebody had made a top hat out of a paper bag for me, boot black, and a bit of a costume.
Okay.
And they put me out on the stage, and I did a song and dance with a stick from a tree as a cane and this top hat, and I won the darn thing.
That's great. At 4 years old.
I won the darn thing. And a bit later in life, I probably thought I won on a sympathy vote, but anyway, I won the darn thing. Now, everybody's super excited. We go back to our little flat, the two-room flat above this hardware store, and my mom and dad sit down the next morning. That was a Friday, as I remember. I think it was a Friday. Anyway, the next morning, both of them have some hours off for a change. And they sat at this little table we had, and I'm sitting on the side, and I wasn't paying attention like I should have until the very end. My mom and dad said, let's go see Sam and his family. And now they had this money, and a lot of money for those days.
Do you remember how much?
I think it was $100.
Wow.
Okay.
And if you think for a second, one of my checks right away, pretty soon, was $75 a week. $75 a week in 1939 had to be, I'm an old mathematician, I think had to be around $1,100 a day. So this is a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's everybody. Oh, so excited. Anyway, my dad left. This is Saturday morning, I think, fellas. And he went somewhere, kind of like Sam did, run off, and got this thing changed some way. And now, I would tell you precisely, but I did not know precisely at the time. Okay? And And we got my hand, and we went down and walked at least 3 or 4 blocks to where Sam, and my dad knew where he was, Sam's house, a little bitty, what we would call a duplex now, right on the edge of the sidewalk. And knocked on the door, my mom and my dad and me. And here comes Sam and his wife and 2 daughters I had never met before. And Sam's a little shocked at the door. And my dad looked like he was a boxer kind of guy. And my dad gave him half of that prize.
Wow.
That
was the right thing to do. Good for your dad.
Yeah.
Really made an impression on me then and now. Okay.
Wow. Well, when did the RKO Talent Scout show up?
In the audience at that talent show was a bona fide talent scout called in those days. I emphasize the word bona fide because that's how it was. Maybe not anymore. And he was there visiting his mother, who was in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was bored, and he'd been there for a week or so. And he's getting ready to go back to Los Angeles. And he's in this audience. And he approached my mom and dad that Sunday, right after we did the Sam visit. He found out where we were. And at first, my dad thought, this was some kind of hanky-panky thing.
He didn't trust it.
No, he didn't trust it. Either, this is too good to be true. Wanted us to go to Hollywood. In a couple of days, we're on a train. We had 1 suitcase between the 3 of us. And this nice man from RKO accompanied us. He paid for everything. We got the Grand Central Station in Los Angeles. None of us had ever seen anything good in our lives. We're, oh my gosh. Put us in a nice apartment with 4 or 5 rooms. My mom didn't know what to do with all this.
And suddenly you're in Hollywood.
Now we're in Los Angeles. And they took me, I think, in 3 or 4 days, real soon, to what I learned later to be a screen test. Okay, I had no idea. I know my mom and dad have got a little money. They have some kind of a car. My dad didn't even have a license. He was worrying about not having a license. We're driving out in this car. And we're at the studio, and we're doing what's called a screen test. And had I understood, I'm 4 years old, had I understood what that was and the significance of it, I would have probably screwed it up. Okay, but I thought, we're having a great time. And I had a great time with it. Somebody asked me to tell a couple of jokes, and they fed me the lines, and I told a couple of jokes. And right away after that, I was loaned out to another studio. And my mom and dad were very sensitive to this. We didn't understand this at all. And that other studio happened to be Universal. And the very first film was Mother Carey's Chickens.
With Margaret Hamilton.
Yes, exactly.
Who was the evil witch?
Wicked Witch of the West.
Yeah.
And Walter Brennan.
Walter Brennan. You know, I think Walter Brennan must have born old looking.
Yes.
He must have been.
Yeah, he was always like, he always looked like he was 90.
Had you turned 5 at this point, Donnie? You're still 4.
No, I'm still 4.
Okay.
This is 1938, Gilbert. So poor. Good question. Right. Good observation, Gilbert. He did. He always looked like he was old. And he made a heck of an impression on me and my mom, who was there almost all the time. My dad was off getting a job somewhere already. I don't think they trusted this operation much. Well, that's honest with you. What the diggers? And they're all in shock. But Walter Brennan was extremely courteous to my mother. I'll never forget. And very courteous with me. And I gave my mom some good advice on how to do some things, and was very, very concerned about our welfare. So he had to have a real good heart, that old man. He probably looked old when he was 19, but
yes.
And Mother Carey's Chicken, it was really a lot of fun. I remember a scene that they had me with a goat, and I fell in love with this goat, and I wanted to take it home. Nobody would let me take it off the studio.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Well, how did you wind up in Son of Frankenstein? Did you have to audition?
I don't think so, sir. I think I'm a wonderful director, very cultured man.
Roland Lee.
Roland V. Lee. Yeah.
Wow, you guys have got your homework done. Roland V. Lee wanted me in the Son of Frankenstein film. I got to share this with you. This is really funny. I was asked a question about this about a year ago, and it brought back this memory. My mom now is trying to teach me some culture, and I'm a young whippersnapper, all excited about all this, and she's trying to get me to introduce people and how to bow and do things that were more common then than now. And very early in the rehearsals, without costume, regular street clothes rehearsal for Son of Frankenstein, everybody's there, and it's early in the morning, and Roland Bailey is getting ready to give us a briefing on what to do. Basil Rathbone, who made an incredible positive impression on me, is what a gentleman's supposed to be. And he's there, and Boris Karloff, and Gilbert, Boris Karloff would have loved you. He would have called you a man that didn't need no batteries, okay?
Wow.
How about that?
Wow, that's exciting. So Boris Karloff would have loved me?
Oh, he would have loved you. I think he wanted to be a stand-up comic. I really do. He was a wonderful guy. And I know something of you and your dynamics. He would have loved you. We're all standing there, and this is at Universal. I had just heard Bela Lugosi, classic horror film guy, right? I just heard his name the day before. And now my mom is trying to teach me culture and how to introduce everything. And I'm trying to pay attention to that. And we're all sitting there. Mr. Lee's getting ready to give us a briefing with a clipboard. I remember that well. Here comes Mr. Lugosi. He's always late. Here he comes. And he's always late by a few minutes. Here he comes, like upstaging everybody or something. And then I wonder, here I am, and I want to impress my mom, everybody, right? And everybody, look here. Here comes Mr. Belly Goosey.
Belly Goosey.
Oh, my. Everybody roared except him. If I had understood what a glare was, I promise you I got a glare.
You got a dirty look from Dracula.
which is quite an honor.
A great honor. Yeah.
He never talked to me throughout the whole movie. And part of that problem was that Boris Karloff, who I promise you, Gilbert and partner, he really wanted to be a stand-up comic. He was a wonderful guy. Boris Karloff and Basil Rathbone teased him with that name throughout the whole movie. Every once in a while, they'd say, "Hey, Belly, get your Goosey over here."
They teased him by calling him Belly Goosey.
Oh, he did not like that at all.
Donnie, I heard you say that Bela didn't socialize much with the rest of the cast.
No, he was always gone. We would have a party or luncheon or something. Oh, and we were going to do something special for the Salvation Army. Everybody, the big guys that moved all the stages around, they showed up. He never showed up. He was kind of, I didn't have this word in my vocabulary then, but I would have called him a compulsive recluse. Okay? He never showed up.
Interesting. Yeah.
And you know what? What's interesting about watching you in the movie is it's like here you are, a curly, blonde-haired little boy.
From
with
the South.
Yeah, with a Southern accent.
Oh, yeah.
And you're Basil Rathbone's son.
Did it ever occur to anybody that we have a kid from Memphis, Tennessee, with a bit of a Tennessee accent playing the son of an Englishman?
Yeah, I'll give you the wonderful question. I'll give you the event that really triggered that one, okay? Early in the film in Transylvania, in the big hall, right?
Yes.
Big hall. One of my lines was to welcome the gendarme, the priest captain, commandante of Transylvania, okay? And here he is, and I'm supposed to welcome him, right? And my line was, well, hello, okay? And nobody had tuned me down any yet. They did pretty quick, okay? But nobody tuned me down yet. And so here we are in dress rehearsal. And no, this is going to be a take. It's going to be take one. And we had these big boom mics on what we would call them, our booms above me, above everybody, way up in the sky. And Mr. Lee, wonderful guy, he is standing way off on the side. I remember him saying, "Donnie, the microphone's way up high. Speak up, son, speak up." He need not have said that to me, speak up. I had a drill instructor voice in those days. Okay? So here's my line, and it's just take one, right? Here I go. Well, hello, you all.
That's so hilarious.
So you're the son of Basil Rathbone living in Transylvania.
Yes.
Saying you all.
Well, hello, you all.
Hilarious. Gilbert and I like the scene when they're putting you to bed and you want the curtains left open and you say, I like lightning. You sort of give yourself away there, Don.
Oh, my gosh. That stopped the production for 10 minutes. Everybody's voice.
Is that a Texas, a little bit of a Texas accent, or is that a Tennessee accent?
Then or no?
Well, then, in those days.
Yeah, I think it was homogenized.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Now, you would play checkers with the great Karloff? We found this fascinating.
Oh, how'd you find out about that? Oh, my gosh. The sets then were real heavy wood, not like today, I'm sure. And it took a long time to change the sets, like in the big hall of Transylvania, et cetera, right? And so there's a lot of time between what I learned then, takes, between scene takes, right? So we're all sitting around, and we couldn't leave. We were all told to stay there. And we had these canvas chairs with our names on it. That was the first time I ever saw my name on anything, and they had a canvas chair here, canvas chair there. And mine was right next to Mr. Karloff's. Now, at this point, I really enjoyed his company because he was really funny. He not as dynamic as Gilbert, from my understanding.
Well, who is?
but you guys would have loved him, and when he was off camera. Now, you remember in Son of Frankenstein, he had no book, he had no lines. He got teased about that. Don't forget your lines, Boris, somebody would say. I'm sitting next to him, and we're bored. I'm bored. I get bored easy, then and now, I suppose. Anyway, Mr. Karloff had borrowed a little checkerboard from somebody. I'd never seen one. It folded in half, very clever, and all the little pieces for it. And on a little bit of a table there with a script girl given us, I think, he taught me how to play checkers. And I'm four by four and a half. And you learn fast then.
That's great.
And it was very easy game. And we had played, I guess, oh, jeepers, for a couple of weeks, once, twice a week, easy, for a couple of weeks. And I had heard, I never have any money. And I know I'm making some money. Everybody's got money now. And ice cream costs a couple of pennies. I never had any money. So I heard the grippers, these big fullback guys, moving all the stuff around, bet the... two bits, half a bit, two bits, and I figured out that was coins, okay? So I'm going to play with Mr. Karloff, and at his invitation, we have at least a 20, 25-minute wait between takes, and I remember saying to him, verbatim almost, I bet you two bits. He was very surprised at that, and he says, you're something like, okay, you're on or something. And so we're playing checkers. He was very popular. This is my introduction to real good leadership, okay? He was very popular. He earned it. Very popular with the hard-working crew guys moving things around with the mic guys. And they're always teasing him, walking by. So he was distracted several times. And I'm playing this game serious, okay? I've got a bet going on this thing. And I won it, legitimately. I won it.
You beat him.
Yeah. So I've got your corner, got your corner, got your corner. People started gathering around. Boris, he beat you. I want my money. I got my hand out in front of everybody. I want this two-bit deal. I want this two-bit deal. Then he went into his costume deal. He's a very clever guy. You know, I'm in costume. I have no money. Doesn't matter to me. I want my money. The crew and Mr. Lee is there teasing him about not paying the kid.
Wow.
He took me by the hand. And he had a bit of a grin on, and I knew I'm okay. So, and he walked. Everybody's following. We went off to inside this huge hangar-like a studio place, soundstage, I think they call it. And into his dressing room, was inside the big building there. Stepped up into it, came out a couple seconds later with what proved later to be a very shiny half dollar. Gentlemen, I had never seen a half dollar. This thing looked like or a gold piece. I mean, it's shiny. And he's trying to give it to me. I think it's funny money. I won't take it. You know, the crew is loving this thing. To see, I could pay my mortgage off if I had a clip of this thing. To see Boris Karloff in full costume get down on one knee in front of this little jerk kid, me, and hold up his half dollar like, Donnie, this is real money. Take it, take it, take it.
That's great.
You know what? What's so funny? We had on Janet Ann Gallo from Ghost of Frankenstein. She used to play hide and go seek with Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney Jr., and you played checkers with Boris Karloff. That to me, the two of you seemed, that's the childhood I wish I had. You know, we're having so much fun here with Donnie Donegan. We're going to make this a two-parter. So let's hear the rest of Donnie's fun stories about his Hollywood career on our next Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions.